Familiar with your cases, we've studied them, we've read the briefs and the relevant parts of the record, so feel free to jump right into the heart of your argument without wasting any time. A reminder about our traffic light system of timing: when the yellow light comes on, you have 2 minutes left in your allotted time, and when the light turns red, we ask that you please bring your remarks to a rapid close unless you're answering a question from the court, and then you may finish your answer. Also, pleased to have here today some law students who are here to learn a little bit more about the court, observe oral arguments, and have lunch with us and ask us some questions. So welcome to you all. Excuse me. Our first case of the morning is number 20-12457, United States versus Shane Harris. Mr. Cummings.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors and counsel. May it please the court. As Erlinger confirms, the district court's fact-finding that Mr. Harris's prior offenses were on different occasions violated his right to a jury trial and the benefit of reasonable doubt. The government has not carried its heavy burden to show, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the error in this case was harmless. The decisions in Rivers and Cogdill confirm as much. Three of Mr. Harris's drug offenses were part of a single buy-bust scheme orchestrated by a county task force. The three sales happened within under a month. Each involved a sale of the same drug to the same informant for the same price in the same place. The police declined to make an intervening arrest, and all the charges were resolved simultaneously with concurrent sentences. So the question is, could a rational jury instructed under Erlinger have some reasonable doubt about whether these sales were different occasions? The answer is a resounding yes. A rational jury applying the multi-factor different occasions test could reasonably believe these offenses constituted one occasion. Indeed, in Cogdill, the Sixth Circuit held that where two drug sales happened in the same county 3 months apart, the government could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the Erlinger error was harmless. And in Rivers, the court reasoned that if a jury might reasonably conclude that prior sales were part of a single criminal episode, the error is not harmless. All the court could say for certain is that the record does not establish beyond a reasonable doubt that the jury would have found unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt.
So the first offense was in 2007, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so really we would have to determine whether a reasonable jury would think that at least two of the three crimes later were separate, right, on separate occasions.
I agree, Your Honor. Our focus is on the 2014 drug offenses.
We wouldn't have to say that a jury would conclude that they were each three separate offenses, just that somehow there were at least two, right?
We are frankly not going to focus on the, we're not going to argue 2007. So yes, Your Honor, you're correct. I agree with that.
So what about Justice Kavanaugh's statement in Wooden that courts have nearly always treated offenses as occurring on separate occasions if a person committed them a day or more apart or at a significant distance?
Correct. So a few things about that. I think Justice Kavanaugh was in dissent, I believe, and he did not earn that opinion did not get a majority support from the Supreme Court, even though Mr. Erlinger's burglaries themselves happened over a span of multiple days, and there were two restaurants, a pizza shop, and another establishment burglarized by Mr. Erlinger across several days. The Supreme Court declined to say this or reach whether this was some sort of harmless error in Erlinger. And one thing I would also just say is Erlinger clarifies that the multi-part Wooden test is part of a holistic analysis, and it emphasized that no particular lapse of time or distance automatically separates occasions. So what is necessary is often an analysis of the character and purpose of the offenses as well, whether they were united in a common scheme or purpose. And although we don't have the burden of proof, it's the government that has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the harmlessness of the error. You could look at even the sentencing record, and there's considerable evidence there where you have the same informant, same MO, in less than a month, and the same task force orchestrating the scheme. A jury could reasonably say this is one occasion when instructed under Erlinger.
What if we had crimes that occurred spaced out, let's say, a week apart, each one, but the crimes were very different. They were in different state. They took place in different states, let's say, and they were of very different nature. Maybe one is a robbery of a pizza shop, another one is a drug offense, another one is something completely different. I don't know. Would you still say that that would have to go to a jury, or is there ever a situation in which a court could look at this and say, yes, these are definitely different occasions?
It's difficult to say, Your Honor, and it's hard to draw a bright red line because this is a question that should belong with a jury, and that's Erlinger's involving a multi-factor test, of course. I assume that there are situations where it could be harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. I can't rule out the possibility. That would be certainly a close case, Your Honor, if you had different character of crimes, very different locations and different natures. Of course, we don't have to resolve that tricky question here because the MO and the character and nature of the offenses is strikingly similar in the words of Rivers, but there's also, beyond that, evidence that they're united under a common scheme, which is this county task force is investigating this individual, and they intend to continue these sales, and they declined to make an intervening arrest because the police intended to keep this event going.
I certainly don't think we have a decision from the Supreme Court saying that every time, if you sell to the same person, set aside informant, if you sell to the same person, that necessarily is on one occasion, right? I mean, I think it might be a little bit of an overreading to say that that means it's on one occasion necessarily.
Well, I don't disagree with Your Honor, but the point simply is, could a reasonable jury, a rational jury instructed under Erlinger, have a reasonable doubt? And that's the modest, simple question.
Okay, so how about this? Speaking of modest, simple questions, let's say that I walk across the street to buy a chicken shawarma sandwich there's a Mediterranean place across the street of the courthouse in Atlanta. I buy it one day and it costs $12. Then 3 weeks later, I'm hungry, so I walk back over and order the same sandwich from the same guy at the counter for the same price. Did those sandwich purchases happen on the same occasion?
Here's the difference between that and this. So the first time you probably went to the shawarma shop.
Well, first, yes, sir. Like, did they happen on the same occasion?
Well, the question is, could a reasonable, rational jury...
No, my question is, did those sandwich purchases to you as an ordinary speaker of the English language happen on the same occasion?
A person could say that they're different occasions, but here's the difference, though. The difference between that scenario and this. The first time you went to the shawarma shop, you didn't necessarily have a plan to go back to the shawarma shop 3 weeks later. It's coincidence because it's close by to the courthouse. You like their shawarma sandwiches, and they're great. In contrast here, there could be a reasonable doubt about whether really this was one agreement for Mr. Harris to sell the informant $120 worth of crack cocaine, and the informant didn't have $120 at once, so it just had to be executed in three installments.
Is the standard that there has to be some marginally plausible scenario in which it could have been one occasion? I mean, that seems higher to me than what Erlinger is requiring.
I think that certainly we could show a plausible scenario. A jury could plausibly find a single occasion, because we have mounting empirical evidence that juries are looking at, they're taking to heart Erlinger's instruction to consider the nature and character of the offenses. And for example, in United States versus Willis, a jury looked at robberies at different locations 2 weeks in between each other and still declined to find different occasions. And the Sixth Circuit in Cogdill said it's not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt where there was a 3-month gap. And the Sixth Circuit looked at that jury verdict and said, this kind of illustrates the point that no lapse of time automatically resolves this. And rational juries really take to heart what Erlinger is saying, which is don't just focus on the lapse of time or distance. Also look at the character and purpose of the offenses, and are they united in a common scheme or purpose, which is what we have here. Your Honors, we submit that this error cannot be shown by the government beyond a reasonable doubt to have been harmless. And unless the court has any further questions for me, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Sweeney.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, counsel, and may it please the court. Applying the factors set forth in Wooden, it is clear beyond a reasonable doubt that a jury would have found that at least three of Harris's prior serious drug convictions offenses were committed on separate occasions. As the Supreme Court recognized in Wooden, a single factor can be and often is determinative, and here that factor is time. And as this court recognized in Penn, 30 days yields an obvious answer that drug sales to the same undercover officer took place on separate occasions. Here, Harris's admissions and convictions establish that he committed at least three offenses on a separate occasion. As the PSR set forth, Harris sold cocaine in 2007, and then he conducted three cocaine sales over 30 days in 2014. As Penn recognized, no reasonable person would say that Harris's sales of cocaine, the last two of which were 23 days apart, occurred on the same occasion. And in looking at what harmless error is in this regard, I would point to this court's Payne decision, which itself relies on an earlier decision called Candelario, which itself relies on Nieder. And in Nieder, the court looked to whether the omitted element is supported by uncontroverted evidence and whether the record contains evidence that could rationally lead to a contrary finding with respect to the omitted element. So this goes to Judge Grant's point that we're not looking for any possible scenario where something could happen. Instead, we're looking at this record and deciding if the omitted element is supported by uncontroverted evidence. And here I would say it is, because we have the convictions, we have the judgments, we have the information, and we have Mr. Harris's lack of objection to any of the facts underlying these offenses. And then next you look to whether the record contains any evidence that could rationally lead to a contrary finding about the contested issue. And here there is nothing. There's nothing here that suggests that a reasonable person, as the court decided in Penn with 30 days, wouldn't say that 23 days also means that these are totally separate occasions.
I think
in United States versus Rivers, the panel in which I sat, we said that a jury might find that four sales over the course of 8 days were a single offense because there were details in evidence such as it was the same confidential informant, it was in the same location, it was set up by the same people, and we sent that back for resentencing. So how is this case different?
Your Honor, I think it's the difference between the time period in Erlinger and in Rivers, which are markedly similar, and the one that we have here. This is a longer span of time that's closer to Penn, where the answer has been deemed obvious to a reasonable person.
Well, if you're relying solely on the difference in the time frame, aren't you falling back into what Wooden said we can't do, which is treat that one factor as determinative?
I don't think Wooden said that, Your Honor. I think that Erlinger says that the Wooden test means that no one factor is automatically determinative. But that doesn't mean that a single factor can't be determinative. And Wooden, in fact, says that a single factor is often determinative in the separate occasions inquiry. And so I think to marry up those two statements between Wooden and Erlinger, by saying that it's not automatic, I think all that means is that in every case, that factor is not going to always be determinative. Essentially, we shouldn't instruct juries that any particular lapse of time automatically equals a decision under Erlinger or Wooden. But it doesn't mean that, even here, in this case, you can see it. There are lapses of time that my colleague doesn't contend don't mean these aren't separate occasions. So looking from 27 to 2014, there's no dispute there that amount of time here means that these are separate occasions. And so it's you to put them together, just because it's not automatic doesn't mean that a single factor can't be determinative and can't here show beyond a reasonable doubt that the jury would have found separate occasions.
What kind of evidence do you think you might have to show, or what kind of evidence do you think might defeat the conclusion that you're looking for with crimes that took place in the same span that these crimes took place in?
I think that the eventuality that was discussed in my colleague's argument, essentially, if there were some sort of a a deal that was set up in multiple parts in kind of one fell swoop. I want to buy, this much cocaine from you, but I'm going to do it over a 3-week period. Perhaps that could. And you can kind of, that might be something that could do it. But there's simply nothing in this record to suggest that that's what happened. And I do think the court can look at that on harmless error based on Nieder and based on Candelario and Payne.
Well, here we have crimes that occurred in the same county, and the Sixth Circuit said in Cogdill that could be the same place for all we know. They were made to the same confidential informant. Law enforcement met with the informant before each sale, and they included the same drugs for the same amount. Why is that not closer to Rivers?
Well, I think that Cogdill is what the Sixth Circuit decided. I would say that Penn is what this court has already decided about a very similar situation. Penn was the 30 days. It also involved sale of drugs to the same person in the same place. It has factors that are very similar to what we have here. And I would say that this court should look to Penn rather than to what the Sixth Circuit did in Cogdill. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, the United States will rest on its briefs. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple of points. The government agrees that if this were really one scheme or one transaction to sell $120 worth of cocaine carried out over three installments, then a jury could find that that was the same occasion, but that there's nothing in the record to support that. And I disagree on two points. One is we do not bear the burden. The government has the burden to prove harmlessness and to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. We don't have the burden. And the second point is, even if we did, there is evidence in the record to support that we could put before Mr. Harris could have argued that it was really a single scheme. But going to Penn, which the government relies upon, I'll start at the surface level and then go a little bit deeper on that. So at the surface level, I think there's a factual difference that could matter before a jury that you have 30 days between two events versus 6-day, 23-day. Again, that's in the eyes of a jury instructed under Erlinger. I think that distinction shows more of a continuous stream of conduct than just a single 30-day gap.
Couldn't you also say that the kind of a randomized length between the offenses suggests that they were not part of the same scheme? If you had a payment plan, wouldn't you maybe meet every Tuesday?
I disagree, not necessarily. And again, I don't think I think that a rational jury could still find the same occasion and not be persuaded by the randomized gaps in time. Also considering, too, that the informant, for all we know, set those dates. And the reason I say that is because in Rivers, the court noted that there were multiple addresses, but that two of the addresses were selected by the informant. So the court has put some noteworthiness upon the fact that the government or the informant seems to affect the dates or locations, perhaps. But the other thing I would say is Penn is also decided before we have the benefit of Erlinger's instruction that no particular lapse of time or distance is automatic. And also, Penn was decided in an environment where this was determined by a judge under a lower preponderance of the evidence standard. And now Erlinger makes clear this is under an elevated proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard, and a jury has to unanimously make the decision.
Penn does say no reasonable person would say that Penn's two sales of cocaine 30 days apart occurred on the same occasion. Penn's offenses no more occurred on the same occasion than two baseball games between the same teams at the same stadium 1 month apart.
Sure.
So I don't think that Penn indicated a lot of uncertainty about what the result was there.
No reasonable person applying a lower preponderance standard. It's different when you have to get 12 jurors unanimously under a proof beyond
reasonable doubt. It doesn't say that. It says no reasonable person.
We also have early, so when Penn says that, in the preceding paragraph, it cites Wooden's language about, in many cases, a single factor can be dispositive. And then it goes on to say what it says. But Erlinger, after Erlinger, it's done a little bit differently. And a jury would be instructed under Erlinger today. And under Erlinger, The jury would be instructed that no lapse of time or distance is automatic, and instead an analysis of the character and purpose of the offenses is part of their inquiry. And again, we have empirical evidence that juries are taking that qualitative aspect of Erlinger to heart. They are weighing whether offenses are similar in character or purpose and finding that even when they're weeks apart, that they were still not proven beyond a reasonable doubt to be different occasions.
What do you think, we don't have facts here, right? Or we have a limited set of facts.
I agree, and that inures against the government.
Sure.
Because they have the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
But what do you think is a scenario? Do you think, not could a jury plausibly conclude this, but would an ordinary reasonable person say was a scenario that meant that drug sales a month apart happened on the same occasion? What would it take to make that factually true? Set aside what a jury could imagine, but what does it really mean to have something be on the same occasion if it takes place a month apart?
I think that if they were part of a plan or part of a scheme, then one person could say they're an occasion. And people commonly
why is that true? I mean, I could have many plans with, if I have a plan to have dinner with friends on the last Friday of every month, that doesn't mean that all those dinners occurred on the same occasion.
But people take, and juries are showing, they take a common sense, flexible concept of occasion consistent with Erlinger's instruction, the way a person might call Mardi Gras on occasion, even though it spans a few weeks. But juries do, we see that they can view an occasion flexibly as covering a span of time, especially if they're united in a common scheme or purpose, as the record shows here. I see my time is up. We ask the court to vacate Mr. Harris's sentence and remand for resentencing without the application of the ACCA. Thank you, Your Honors.
Our next case up is